This is episode 66 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hey, I'm Adam Grant, author, podcast host, and Wharton professor. If you want to finally crack the code on building a successful life, then fire up the Next Year Now podcast with my friend Tom Hefner.
But I've noticed that it's one thing to take physical time to do a task, but it's also something to just have to think about it and take some of that mind share.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day, purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Today we're doing something different. Instead of interviewing a world-class expert to uncover the habits and practices that have fueled their success, I decided to flip the tables. That means someone is going to interview me with the idea of having me reflect a bit about the last several months of focusing on my business and entrepreneurship 100% of the time. No more APL, no more day job. Alec Poulianos, my podcast editor, the man behind the scenes, is going to be doing the honors of interviewing me today. In our conversation, we'll be discussing the pros and cons of having work lined up before making the leap full-time, the impact on my family, and how I manage the day-to-day separation of work and family, the habits I'm leveraging in my work and life that I've learned on the show, and book recommendations to help you market better and create a more effective morning routine.
This week's podcast is sponsored by AMP Creative Studios. If you've been thinking of starting a podcast and don't know where to start, I can give you the help that you need. I've helped kickstart multiple podcasts by suggesting audio gear, setting up websites, and getting them in the iTunes directory. If you're worried about the most time-consuming part of creating a podcast, I also offer high-touch editing. I don't just simply sync up your tracks and post the episode. I'll listen through the whole episode, take out any filler words, improve forward flow, and make sure you sound your best and your smartest. Podcast editing is a funny thing. When done well, it's invisible to the listener, but when it's not, it's very apparent. So if you're ready to up your podcasting game, feel free to reach out to me at ampcreative.studio or email me at alec@ampcreative.studio. All right, Tom. So how long have you been independent now and how have the months gone?
So Alec, I like to think of this in like two different terms. And one is that when I first started my business, officially, that was back in November of 2017. And I was still working full-time for my, well, the organization you know very well, the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. And I did that for a while. And eventually, I got to the point where I thought I was going to go full-time and quit APL altogether. And that was somewhere around June-ish of 2018, so last year. But as a lot of entrepreneurs have experienced, I wasn't ready to make that jump. I was probably a little bit fearful and in my own eye, I rationalized it and probably made some excuses that I didn't need to make. So it really wasn't until March of this year that I became fully independent and running my own business and not working for anybody else. And yeah, so far, like it's one of those things where, and you hear this a lot in the entrepreneurial world, which is, man, I can't believe I waited that long. I should have done this months earlier, even years earlier. And I think, not to be cliche about it, but I think that probably applies in my case too. I wish I had done it sooner. I think everybody kind of has their own unique path to walk, but I wish I had done it sooner. That's kind of how I think about that.
Interesting. Yeah, I hear a lot of people say that. I was wondering, how much runway of work did you have lined up before leaving your job? Not in terms of like money saved per se, but gigs that you knew were coming. And then how many gigs did you get in the time going ahead?
Yeah, and I think this is where sometimes I think people think, oh, you know, I should have left early, because oftentimes when people leave their job, they have work lined up, or they think they have work lined up, and then when they get there, everything kind of goes haywire, because that's entrepreneurship. I had a friend of mine who I had on this podcast before, and he said something to the effect that you have all this stuff planned and it sounds really, really perfect in your head. And once you actually get out there and start doing it, nothing comes through. Like, all those clients you thought you were going to get don't come through. All that work that you thought you were going to have doesn't come through. Now, what I will say is, in my case, I actually did have a lot of work lined up. I had work lined up right away. I mean, I had work to the tune of the work that I do outside of podcasting is innovation consulting. And I had probably 2 to 3 workshops. I call them workshops, engagements. And those typically last anywhere between 2 and 3 days a pop. I had those lined up for March, for May, for April. So I had a lot lined up. I think I should have left earlier because I waited for that security. But it's one of those things, like, once you start to put it out in the world, like, things start to happen. Like, if you say, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to do this, and you start voicing that and communicating that to your network, to your peers, to your colleagues, the work starts to come. And not in, like, you know, a field of dreams, if you build it, they will come. But it really does. So I was pretty lucky, like I said, that I had a lot lined up and I was ready to kind of just dive into it.
Awesome. So do you find your work to be more seasonal, or is there high and low points as far as innovation training goes?
Yeah, I think there is a seasonality to it, because it's training and development work. And so when you think about training and development, just kind of think of your own experiences. And so things like, or times like, the holidays are usually kind of slower. So typically I won't work in December. And not to say that there isn't work there. It's just, in by and large, you think about it, most people are kind of preparing for their Christmas holiday break or otherwise. And even, you know, the summertime can be hit or miss, because sometimes people are going on summer vacations, especially in America, right? Where you have lots of people, that's the time that they go on vacation, is in the summertime. And so I'd say, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, busy times for me are typically kind of in the beginning of the year through May. And then it slows down a little bit for June and July, picks back up for kind of August, September, or October. And then November is, I'd say it's like kind of a 50% month.
Gotcha. So does that seasonality help you run your business? Do you change what you focus on in different months?
It definitely changes my strategy, in the sense that, I'll give you an example. We're in May, we're in the middle of May, and I've made just about 90% of the income that I would have made working at APL or through the end of May. And so on the one hand, you could be like, wow, that's amazing. Like, you're on pace to double your income, which is true. Like, if I kept that pace up. But the reality is that I'm kind of accounting for the fact that I know that there's going to be some slower months ahead. And so I may still get to that point where I double it, and I'm hopeful that I will. But I know that because of that some of those slow periods later in the summer and the year, I know that I wanted to get a lot of work in early. And so taking on and advertising and marketing and all around developing that business early on in the year through now has been really important.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
So I guess another question I have for you is, how does your family dynamic change now that you're independent? Now that you could be home more, is there ways that you signify when you're working versus when you're available to the rest of the family? Do you always work in the same place? Lots of questions about this.
Yeah. So those are good questions. I should pull my wife in here for this conversation. She probably has some interesting...
Hey, feel free.
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons why I decided to go out on my own was for the freedom to do kind of, well, what I want, when I want, with whom I want. And part of that is the freedom to be able to, you know, take my kids skiing. Like, this wintertime, I was able to take my kids skiing a number of times. And that'll be even more so next year when we have ski passes again. And I'll have the whole wintertime, like, when I take off all of December, we're going to be we're going to be able to go a ton of skiing. And even something as simple as in the summertime, when I know that we're going to be taking off the month of August so that we can, I'm taking my boys with my dad. We're going to go out west and do some travel out there for some hiking and camping. And we're going to be going out in Western Maryland into Deep Creek Lake. So it's definitely giving me more time and flexibility to do things with my kids that I wouldn't have been able to do had I still been kind of working at the day job, so to speak, at APL. So there's that part of it, right? At the macro level of trying to understand, like, yeah, there, like, is this change? Yeah, 100%. It's significantly changing how and when I do things with them. Now, on like the micro level of like, how do I signal to my family? I don't know that I've done a very good job at this because I haven't been intentional about it yet, but I'm starting to think about how I can be. And so right now it's kind of just like, if I'm podcasting, for example, if I'm doing an interview, I'm usually telling my wife like, hey, I'm going to be on this call for a podcast interview. Like, door needs to stay closed. Kids can't come in. And it would be really ideal if you could be outside. And so when they know when the door to my office, my home office, where I have my recording studio, they know when that's closed, dad's doing work, whether it's podcasting or otherwise. And so I think the change that I'm hoping to implement is basically moving all of my productive hours between kind of, I'll say, you know, 9:30 to 3:30 or 9:30 to 3, so that when they're home, I don't have to make that signal of like, oh, dad's got his door closed. I don't do it often, so it's not like I'm just completely ignoring them when they come home, but it's just there are some times when I've had to do interviews at like non-opportune time. So it might be like 5 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. And so it's nothing special of how I'm doing it, but I think I could definitely do it better.
Yeah, I find it really difficult sometimes, particularly that we have these devices that kind of cross between work and play. For instance, my iPad, which I do a lot of my work on, I also, you know, watch YouTube videos on that. I'm also IMing friends, etc. That kind of cross-pollination of work and play, it's sometimes difficult to signify like, oh, I'm actually doing work right now on this iPad. I'm not actually just goofing off. And usually, you know, I'll have my pencil in hand and I'll probably have headphones in looking intently. That might signal it, but at the same time, it might not, because I could be doing other things.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I do, you know, I do a lot of work on my laptop and my iPhone, and not so much like doing interviews on my iPhone, but like there's times when I'm doing research or I'm reading the ebook of an author that I have coming up on the show, and my family thinks, oh, he's just playing, right? He's just kind of, you know, he's just reading ESPN because I like sports. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we definitely have some kind of mix-ups with that. But I can see, again, just being more intentional. I think the big thing for me is going to be over the next 2 to 3 months is kind of just shifting my schedule to mostly during the day when they're not home, and then also at night when they're kind of in bed. So that's kind of like my going-in solution, which will be easier now that I'm not doing the day job. So before, a lot of these challenges with kind of that overlap with work and life, it was because I was working full-time at APL. It was because at the same time I was doing my podcast. It was because at the same time I was beginning to set up my business and get my business going. And there's only so many bucks you have to give in the day. There's only so much time. And so I was forced to do a lot of the stuff when I got home from work, and that wasn't, you know, great timing. But now that I am independent, I'm able to do more of that stuff during the day, which is why I go back to that first point that I was making, which is, man, I really wish I had done this months ago, even years ago, because it is in some ways easier, because now I'm not trying to use all 24 hours of the day, right? Like I'm able to maximize the time during the day when my kids are in school.
Absolutely. And I know that I struggle myself as I'm starting up this small business on the side. It is really challenging, particularly the last few months have been extremely challenging. I was wrapping up grad school. I was in the middle of a move, just moved a couple weeks ago. And it was crazy. It was a crazy time. And it's really challenging when you have all those things going on, because you're borrowing time everywhere to try to put everything together. Mm-hmm. And particularly from sleep. That's my favorite one to steal from. And it's not good. And I was really getting burnt out. I could tell that it wasn't good for my relationship. It wasn't good for basically anything. And I'm just really glad a lot of that has stopped. The move is done. Grad school's done forever, which is awesome. And I'm like really excited. Everyone's like, oh, what are you going to do with all that time? And I keep telling them, nothing. I'm not trying to fill it up anymore. I have enough going on with everything else that was just getting to become too much. And I'm looking forward to taking a step back now and relaxing a little bit.
Well, I know what you're going to do with that time. You're going to sleep.
I know. I know. I'm trying to be better about that. I would always use my devices all the way, you know, right until I said it was time to sleep. And the last few nights, I just gave up on that. And I've definitely noticed that I slept better, which kind of pisses me off in a way, because I really wish it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I know I should be doing this, but it's really hard to sometimes.
There's some interesting, you probably already know this, but there's some interesting research on like the effect of blue light on our sleep cycles, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some, I had Ted Rice on the show a while back. He's a celebrity fitness trainer. And he talked about these glasses that he buys, and they look kind of weird and kind of silly. But he wears mm-hmm. these glasses that filter out like light from like electronics, iPads and computers. And so he, about like, I don't think it's like an hour before bedtime or 2 hours before bedtime, he starts walking around with these glasses on, which, you know, look kind of silly, but he swears by them. He says he sleeps 100% better than he did before. And so, like, I don't have that issue. I just conk out. But I know my son, who has ADHD, and he doesn't watch necessarily a lot of TV, but like we give him usually like 30 minutes at the end of the day, once he's finished with his homework, to watch on the iPad or watch on the computer. And so he has always had issues sleeping. Now, some of that is with his ADHD, but I think there's a good portion of it that's due to just being like his sleep cycle is off kilter from getting that electronic light that kind of resets your sleep cycle.
Yeah, I used to use Night Shift and Flux on my computer.
Yeah.
After I fought it for a long time. Then I started to use it, and then I hated it. I hated how it made the screen look.
Yeah.
And even though it made like my, I definitely could tell it was like easier on the eye, but I just hated how the screen looked. And I was like, man, I'd just rather not use it. Which is, I guess, maybe it's a good reason to use it. It's not even that I'm not getting the blue light. I'm just repelled to use the device. It's repelled, it is.
You know what? I've toyed with this idea of getting, you know, talking about like habits that I've adopted. One that I'm thinking about adopting is getting a, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's for lack of a better phrase, it's like a lockbox for your electronics. And the idea is like you put your phone in there whenever you want, and you put a time on it, and you don't get it before that time. Like, unless you've got a sledgehammer somewhere to break this thing open. And part of me is kind of like, well, that's kind of sad that you have to do that for yourself. But then part of me is like, you know what though? Like, I think there's some value in just being able to, like, you know, I'm just going to lock it in there. And now the easier thing to do, like my wife has said, is just go put it out in the car and just don't touch it until the morning. But I don't know if it's there, it's not that I'm addicted to it, but it's just like, well, I can check email, or I can look up some research for a podcast guest, or I can fire off an email to a prospective client. And if it's there, I'll do it. You know what I mean? Or I'm more prone to do it, I guess.
I'm definitely that way. My biggest issue is if I read an email or I check off an IM in iMessage, suddenly I forget that it exists, right? So it's like, if I don't reply right then and there, it usually is a bad thing, unless I put it in like a task manager after that, which just feels, it's like, oh, it's easier just to reply than to put it into a task manager. But then you get caught in the cycle, and then before you know it, you're working. And it's a tricky one for sure. I know between that, you know, Night Shift and screen time, you can definitely put some restrictions on yourself and have to enter your passcode in order to use your phone if you try to open up an app after a certain time or after a certain amount of usage in a day. I just haven't bothered with all that. I feel like you said I should be able to control myself better without these aids.
Right. No, I hear you, man.
So is there any other habits and practices you're looking to apply? Maybe from a recent guest?
You know, one that I've really struggled with, like in practice, I know what it is. And in practice, I understand how to do it. But is this idea of prioritization? So we had Jeff Woods on. he was from the One Thing podcast, and so there was a book by Gary Keller and I forget who his co-author was, but so Gary Keller is Keller Realty, and anyways, long story short, the crux of the book is like basically getting to this, like, what's the one thing that you can do right now to kind of get one step closer to the goal that you want to achieve? Like, if you had a set of goals and imagine those as dominoes, and like the first domino that knocks the rest of the dominoes down, like, what's that one goal? If that domino is a goal. And like in practice, I understand what that means, you know, and I even use, you've been through one of my innovation classes where we talk about the importance difficulty matrix, and that's a great prioritization tool. And so I have these different tools, and I understand the value of like of prioritizing down to one, but I've found it really, really challenging as an entrepreneur to prioritize like the one thing. I'm not trying to brag, but like I'm definitely very successful as an entrepreneur so far. I'm taking care of my family. I'm meeting my financial obligations. I'm meeting my financial goals. But the thing that I am just, I feel like I'm failing at like repeatedly is this idea of prioritization. And it's because there's so many things to do and there's all these different things I could be doing. And I'm like, it feels like you're kind of like juggling lots of plates or spinning lots of plates, as they say. And so I just really struggle with that one. So anyways, that's my long-winded way of saying like, I'm really trying to get to the habit of concentrating on just one thing, like one major thing for the day that I'm going to work on. And then that's it.
Yeah. I've been struggling with that for a while now. I remember when I was at my previous job, I actually went to my old supervisor and I said, "Hey, like, I haven't gotten any negative feedback at work, but I feel like I'm doing terribly lately. And it's because I'm getting pulled in all these different directions. I'm always ping-ponging between different things, and I feel like I'm not getting anything done anywhere. But if I don't pay attention to these different things, then I'd really be dropping the ball somewhere. You know, I felt like I couldn't just prioritize one thing because everyone was expecting some of my time." And she was like, "Yeah, that's normal.
That's normal.
Maybe, like, I think you're doing all right if no one's complaining and I haven't heard anything." So I wouldn't worry too much about it. And, you know, that kind of went away when I changed jobs because I had to regain my reputation. I only had one tasking, and it was kind of nice being able to just focus on that one thing. But fortunately/unfortunately, that's quickly changed. So it's kind of back right at it. They recently made me a section supervisor, and that just has my head spinning 24/7, I feel like. And it's weird because the job itself doesn't necessarily take too much extra time, but it takes up a lot of mind space, I've noticed. And it's not to say I don't have other little projects showing up now and other commitments that are also taking time and attention, but I've noticed that it's one thing to take physical time to do a task, but it's also something to just have to think about it and take some of that mind share.
Well, I think there's, for all of us that are listening in right now and thinking about it, I think one of the things that really makes it difficult for us is that, you know, a lot of us, we want to be good colleagues. We want to be good teammates. And so I imagine you've encountered this too, where you have all these different things you need to do. And sure, you know, you could just tell people, "No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it." But you feel somewhat obligated to be a good teammate and to kind of chip in and do your part, right? You don't want to be the weak link. And that was always my challenge when I was, you know, when I was at APL, is like, I didn't want to be that person that didn't do their part. Like, I wanted to do a good job. I wanted to be a good teammate. And then now in my business, I feel like the challenge is I've got all these different things and I'm making the trade-off of money, because not all tasks are created equal. But until I get what I call financial margin, then there's going to be certain things that matter more than other things. But then it's not like that none of them don't matter or that only one doesn't matter. That's the thing that I'm struggling with. I think a lot of us in entrepreneurship struggle with it. I think people in at work struggle with it. But my goal is to really, really embrace this philosophy of like, what's the one thing? The other thing I'm going to integrate with that, that I think is going to really, really help me. And this comes from a friend of mine. She has a podcast as well. Her name's Amber. I don't know how you pronounce her last name. Deibert. Deibert. But she talked about this idea of having outcome-based to-dos. So instead of just having a list of prioritized to-dos, which is, you could do that fairly easily, those things could all be, I'll say, disparate, right? You could have tasks that don't necessarily relate to each other, but be in the top three. Instead of having those, she's advocates for like having outcome-based. So if like, in my case, for example, one of the big things that I'm working on right now is finalizing my online design thinking course. And it's been something that I've been working on and kind of, I teach it all the time. I do it in workshops and people have been asking for the virtual. And I don't know, I haven't gotten around to it, I guess. And so I do little bits and pieces along the way, but she kind of made a good point. She was like, look, just do it. Like when she was talking about outcome-based to-dos, like think about like what's the outcome that you're trying to get done and then just focus on that one outcome, if that makes sense. Instead of a one task, focus on that one outcome. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think it's really interesting too, because once you create something like that, it's like a passive income source, which is really powerful.
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the things that I want to be able to do more of. Cause one of the downsides, you haven't asked me about this, but I'll just throw it out there. One of the downsides of entrepreneurship of having your own, I want to be fully transparent to you and to everybody else, is that there are good things and there are not so good things. One of the downsides to entrepreneurship and having your own business is if I don't work, I don't make money. So
No one else is going to do the work. No one else is going to pick it up.
Yeah.
If you get sick, everything stops.
It's exactly right. And I just got, you can hear in my voice, I'm still a little bit congested because I got a massive viral infection and it put me down for a couple of days. Like I managed to push through one of my last engagements and workshops, but it wasn't fun. And you know what? Like I've got a shoulder that has a torn labrum that I need to get surgery on, but I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, like when am I going to get surgery? Because if I'm out for a month, that means I'm not, the type of work that I do is in-person consulting, in-person training and development, podcasting, right? Like it requires me. And so not having a passive income stream is problematic. And so, you know, most entrepreneurs, that's the case, right? You're selling some product or service, and oftentimes that product or service is you in some form or the other. So that is kind of a downside. But the good news is it's forced me to think about like, okay, what's something of value that I can give, or what's a problem that I can solve? So for me, one of the things that I don't see a really good design thinking online-based program out there, and I know that I can solve that problem. So hopefully, you know, in the next few months, that'll go live, especially as I focus on an outcome-based to-do list. And like, that's the one thing that I want to do first. So we're getting there.
That's awesome, man. So actually, I was also in my butt with a ear infection and sinus infection, a double whammy, just a couple weeks ago. So it was pretty miserable. It happened literally right when we were moving. I just thought I was, I don't know, low in sleep, like a little under the weather. And then we actually went on a trip immediately after we moved, and I was pretty miserable out there. But I powered through as best as I could. All just to get an antibiotic that cleared me up within like 2 days. Kind of sucked. I was like, man, I date a doctor. She could have just done this.
Well, you know, so going back to what you said earlier, like that, and I think everybody does this. I do it. You do it. I think we all do it. Is you say when time gets short, then you take away sleep, right? Like that's where you're stealing time. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you get sick more often. Like I've seen it in my own life. You get more irritable, you get more susceptible to, you know, to colds and things like that. I don't know. It's just taking away sleep is such an important thing to our health. And yet it's the first thing that we steal time away from.
Yeah. I'm trying to be better about that. So
me too.
I guess I'll ask you your last question, your closer. What books are you reading right now? And do you have any book recommendations at the moment?
Yeah. So I do have some books that I would recommend, and two that I'm reading right now or getting ready to start reading. The first one is How to Write Copy That Sells by Ray Edwards. And the reason why I picked this book up is because Ray Edwards in the world of online business is something of a has a cult following. And it's because he helps people learn how to. He's got this formula called the Pastor Formula on how to write compelling copy. So that's like marketing and advertising. And it's just something that like I've never really done. And if you do it well, things just kind of sell themselves. And so in the world that I work in and live in and do, like, you need to be able to write compelling copy. Sales copy that sells you as a person, you know, when I'm doing my consulting work, my training work, the podcast, you know, as much as I like to think that, hey, if you create an amazing podcast with really, really good value, you still need to be able to create sales copy to help sell that, to help market it, to help advertise it, as much as you don't think you have to. And that's, I think that's like the engineer in me, right? Like just do like an amazing work and the rest of it will take care of itself. And the reality is it doesn't. Like, you need to be able to do that. So anyways, that's my long-winded way of saying How to Write Copy That Sells by Ray Edwards is a book that you should read, that everybody should read. The next book that I'm getting ready to read, and this was a recommendation from one of my past guests, is called The Miracle Morning. And it's...
I remember that show.
Yeah. So have you read that book?
I have not.
It's by a guy named Hal Elrod. And I've heard tons and tons about it. Pat Flynn from The Smart Passive Income has talked about it on his show as a book that has really transformed his morning. And I don't know, like the morning, I struggle with the morning because I'm not a morning person. For a year prior to that, I was doing like the early morning wake up, you know, get up super early in the morning, go swimming, meditate. And then I just kind of got out of it. And so, I don't know, I'm looking for a little bit of inspiration, but also now that I am kind of transitioned from working at APL and at an organization, day job, I have a little bit more flexibility to kind of design my morning. So that's another one that I'm reading. And then there's another one that's on my book list to get that I've been recommended, and I'm just pulling it off my desk right now, and it's called The Path, What Chinese Philosophers Can Teach Us About the Good Life. And so this is, in a lot of ways, kind of right up my alley in the work that I've done and the research that I've done from graduate school in positive psychology. And so just, you know, trying to, like, I'm always interested in learning about philosophy and how that relates to living a good life. And so I had a friend recommend this one. She had gone through the coaching program at Georgetown, the executive leadership program. So what about you? What's one book you're going to read? I can't help it. The interviewer in me has to know.
Yeah. Like I said, I just got off of grad school. So that was the textbook that I was reading. So there's a couple books I want to read. They're not really productivity based, but they're books I have around. One book I have over my shelf that I haven't read yet is Becoming Steve Jobs. Mm. I bought it day one, and I hear it's actually a really excellent portrayal of the history of Steve Jobs. The Walter Isaacson book, in my opinion, wasn't very good, even though he had firsthand access. It wasn't the book, in my opinion. And I'm looking forward to this one. I hear it's much better. Another book I really want to read that is on my to-buy list is The Design of Everyday Things.
Oh,
I've heard
yeah.
this book recommended 1,000 times, and I've definitely have heard a lot about it and a lot of little pieces of it, but I want to sit down and actually read the whole thing. And I think that really appeals to the designer in me. Now, last night, I watched a TED Talk that I really feel like I need to share.
Do it. Let's hear it.
It was by Paul Reed Smith of PRS Guitars. He's an engineer who was obsessed with making the most, or the least subtractive, as he called it, guitar. He says, when you play a guitar, the biggest thing he was saying in the speech was, you put in 6, and if you get back 5.9, that's excellent. Because all it does is lose energy. And it was a very good presentation. Definitely recommend watching it, paying attention to the way he engaged with the audience. Candidly, his passion is infectious. Even if you're not an engineering nerd who loves music like me, So he was hitting every single one of my triggers. I think you'll appreciate it.
All right. I'm going to check that out.
It was actually really cool. Yeah. He had props. He did a lot of things. So it was really cool.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah. 15 minutes well spent.
Cool. Well, Alec, thank you for doing me the honor of interviewing me this week so that I had a chance to kind of share a little bit about my journey with everybody. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about some of your journey in the near future and your work with podcasting.
Yeah, man. It's going to be an interesting couple of months. So I'm going out to a conference in early June, and I'm going to see if I can find any business. In fact, I was actually working on my business card earlier this morning, and I'll be getting those very soon.
All right.
But yeah. It's next up is actually make the website so I can share that. Right now, it just forwards to my blog post about starting the business, but
you'll get there.
We'll be ramping up soon. Yeah, I'm going to have it all ready by June 3rd.
All right, man.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. Don't forget that today's episode was sponsored by AMP Creative Studios. If you're looking to start your own podcast or create amazing audio quality for your business, or maybe you just want to bring your business alive with audio content, then make sure to check out AMP Creative Studios at ampcreative.studio. You'll be glad you did. I hope you enjoyed today's special episode. Our next episode will be back to the normal routine of interviewing a guest, and you won't want to miss it because this person is really going to help you up your ability to thrive at work and in life. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.